In a moment, you're going to hear an incredible story. Our special guest, J.D. Messenger, joins us. His work, 11 Days in May. And we'll find out all about that in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Just got zapped with a 3.5 in Beverly Hills, an earthquake. I felt it. I felt it. Let me tell you a little bit about J.D. Messenger, former CEO of the Ernst & Whinney Consulting Company out of Singapore, one of 37 distinguished graduates from Annapolis, a former fireman, nuclear submarine officer, former radio and television show creator and host. In the world of business, he helped supervise the Valdez oil spill, the cleanup, of course, and as an advisor to Fortune 100 clients. J.D. Messenger on Coast to Coast. J.D., how are you?
I'm great, George, and I've been cracking up laughing for 2 hours listening to your show on how to survive and thrive.
Are we going to make it?
Well, you know, my radio show on CNN called Global Evolution, the subtitle was How to Survive and Thrive the Next 10 Years. And I have been doing that as the things you just said, with nuclear war and as an advisor. And the essence of 11 days, in May, I wrote a blog for gyms saying there are no coincidences. This is a synchronicity. And because the essence of 11 days in May was written to help the zombies wake up and get out of what I call drinking the misconception and illusion gumbo. We got to stop drinking this stuff because it's killing us. And the strange but true, it's kind of like a Ripley's story, right? The strange but true things that we'll get into in my life is that I have had visions of all these things for many years, and it was driving me crazy. I had a vision of the Valdez oil spill 4 days before it happened, and when it happened, I felt so guilty. That's why I volunteered to go help clean it up. And I have had visions about the things that Jim and you were talking about, especially solar flares and power failures. And this is what compels me to do what I do.
Now, you also have gone through some incredible health issues that really could have taken you down.
Well, they did take me down. I like to say, you know, I had 12 years of physics, metallurgy, biology, chemistry, underwater acoustics, weapon systems. I had so much left brain stuff in my head, I walked with a port list. and God or the universe or whatever you want to call it whacked me so hard it broke my neck. And I can share the story of that if you want, because everyone says, well, how did you do that? Started in 1985, the first time, because there was twice.
You broke your neck twice?
Well, yeah, they were related.
Okay.
The first time was 1985. I was on the USS Tecumseh in Newport News Shipyard, and we were overhauling the submarine. And it's in dry dock, and it's up in the air 90 feet. Looks like, a Tom Clancy kind of movie. The thing's cut to Swiss cheese, and it's November, and there's the mist and the fog and the lights, and I've been up working for 20 hours as the officer in charge, and we were getting ready to refuel the nuclear reactor. And so, the core is open and glowing. I mean, it looks like some sort of science fiction movie, right? And we're getting ready to lower the fuel rods, and so I'm kind of paying attention to that. And a crane swings a load, and I see it coming out of my peripheral vision, and in a nanosecond, I've got a choice between jumping in a 90-foot hole or something. And between the time that I thought about it and something, I got my head whacked and it snapped my neck back. And that caused a lot of damage, and I was in traction. And I had one of those little electrical things that you strap to your back and try to reduce the pain. You turn up the voltage until you start twitching like a rabbit.
That's right. Yeah.
It doesn't work so well, but I got better, and what happened was over 15 years, parts of my neck sort of started deteriorating until the morning of January 18th of 2000, which I called my wake-up call. I was unbeknownst to me, my neck was sort of falling apart. And I knew I was in pain, and I started taking a pain pill, you know, Motrin, not drugs, but
over-the-counter stuff.
Yeah, over-the-counter stuff. And in the summer, and by the time January came around, I was popping a whole bottle every, you know, every couple of days.
Jeez.
And so I put my arms in the air one morning to stretch after I woke up, and I took a stretch, and whatever little bit was holding me together came apart. And it felt like, you know, I can laugh right now, but I'll tell you, it wasn't very funny when it happened.
No, that's pain.
It felt like I was literally being split in half with an axe. I mean, every nerve and muscle getting a jolt of 10,000 volts. And I left my body. And I, you know, when I was at the Naval Academy, one of my commanding officers was a former POW from... Actually, he was in the camp with John McCain.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, Paul Galanti, wonderful man. And he had the, during the torturing, they would write, if you ever read about these POWs, they would have out-of-body experiences. And, you know, if you haven't ever experienced that, it's kind of, you know, what does that mean? Well, I'll tell you what it meant to me. I mean, I left my body and watched my body like a rag doll, you know, collapse and hit the nightstand and then fall and flop onto the floor. And I was kind of like, what part of me is watching my body, you know? And so then I reentered, which was a little rougher than the space shuttle, you know, going through the atmosphere. And that's when I had sort of one of the most unusual and amazing experiences in my life. It was about 15 days later, after the morphine drip, they took bone out of my hip to put my neck together.
Unbelievable.
And my trachea was all out of in the wrong place because I had to move it. My nerves were crushed down my arms and my neck and my back, you know, so I couldn't feel too much and I couldn't walk and I'm in braces. And I was laying in bed staring at the ceiling. You know, I'm not a double A personality. I'm a triple A, you know, and
I'm like you. And by the way, let me quickly tell you. You mentioned Paul Galante.
Yeah.
Standing across from me is my operations guy and engineer, whose name is Dan Galante. Guess who he's related to?
No way.
Sure is. It's his uncle.
Are you kidding me? Let's do a shout-out for Paul. Thank you for your service, Paul, and everything you've done to our country. And I just got the goosebumps all over me, which if you there's a parable in 11 Days of May, I call them the truth bumps.
Small world.
Yet no coincidences, right?
That's right.
You know, this is how this show started. What I was saying, I put a blog up, by the way, for on the show with Jim and sent it to him. But isn't that amazing? Wonderful man. So
we've got the so your body's falling apart here.
Well, all I can do is lay in the bed and stare at the ceiling, and, you know, I can't turn my head. I can't really talk. I've lost 20 pounds. And, you know, I'm a little PO'd, you know, and I'm not happy, and I'm crying, and I'm depressed, and this has never happened to me before. And I silently shout to God, you know, why the hell did you do this to me? And... This is, you know, no matter how many times I tell this story, it kind of breaks me up.
I understand.
My three-year-old son, I'm upstairs. You know, the door is closed. We're in Singapore. It's a huge house. You know, I don't know where he is, but within 3 minutes, the door handle jiggles, and Grant comes walking in, bouncing on his toes like he did, and he goes, Daddy, you work too hard. Then he shoots out and he leaves. And I'm like, trying to, like, move my eyes, kind of, Grant, you know, get over here, if you can imagine my eyes, like trying to signal him or something,
yeah,
you know? And the next day, it happens again, and this time a silent prayer, you know, I shout in my mind, what do you want me to do, you know? And within a couple of minutes, the door handle jiggles, and Grant opens the door, and he says, Daddy, you need to play. And then he bolts out of the room again. And I'll tell you, you know, I'm not making any of this up. For all of our listeners out there, you know, so I'm, you know, this advanced math major, nuclear engineer. What do? I start calculating the probability, you know, of course, right? Isn't that what the normal person would do?
That's right.
Yeah. So, you know, I'll skip the formulas and the math and all that, but it was one in a million. It was one in a thousand that he, you know, answered a silent thing that he never, you know, heard with a rational answer. And then twice in a row is one in a million. And so I'm thinking, you know, is this a coincidence? Is he reading my thoughts? You know, because I'm a very systemic, holistic, connect the dots kind of thinker, you know. Science, math, phenomenology, this is what I've done my whole life. And so I actually start to feel a little better, like, could God possibly, you know, be answering my prayers to my son?
Somebody's listening, right?
Yeah, so the next day, I basically do it the same, except this time I'm not angry, and I say, well, you know, can you give me a straight answer? And jiggle, jiggle, Grant comes in, bouncing, jumping around, and he goes, remember, remember. And I'm like, you know, what the heck does that mean? Well, I have to tell you, this you know, it was the beginning of a multi-year journey because I realized that although I had been very successful, had made a lot of money, had a beautiful family, beautiful home and all that, I wasn't happy. And I was like, why am I not happy? You know, I mean, I thought I did everything that I was supposed to do, right? And
you would think so.
Well, you think so. But, you know, what I came to realize, cutting like a 3 or 4 year journey short, was that money didn't make me happy, that who I was not what I did, and what I did was not who I am. And that there must be some amazing things going on that I don't understand. And I had a number of amazing coincidences. I started something, you know, I like to say to people, something happened when my neck got whacked because I started to have more visions and strange metaphysical experiences and just things that were literally one in a billion. I could tell you this one in a billion coincidence with a book called Many Lives, Many Masters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know that book. Great book by Brian Weiss.
Brian's been on many times.
Brian, yeah, he's a wonderful soul. And eventually, you know, after I tell this story, you know, I'd met Brian and he had helped me through regression analysis and hypnosis and a whole bunch of other things to uncover some of these mysteries here. But I'm in my office. It's the last day. I've decided I can't do what I'm doing. I have to go on this quest. And I've got, you know, a nice office and a credenza with like 50 books lined up. And there's one book that's, you know, they go from, you know, left to right. They go from short to high to short. You know,
yeah.
They're in. I'm a military guy. They're in height formation.
Yeah, everything's in order.
Everything's in order.
9 years Navy for me, too.
What's that?
9 years Navy for me, too.
Well, what did you do?
I was a public affairs officer.
Uh-huh.
I roughed it out.
Yeah.
I was a 1655. One more year, I would have been a lieutenant commander, J.D. One more.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you for your service. And then my whole unit went up to Desert Storm, and I had gotten out 1 month before that. Unbelievable.
Same thing happened to me.
Really?
Yeah, I got out 1 month before. They actually had tried to recall me. My resignation had already been approved. After 11 years in the Navy and punching holes under the water for 6 or 7 months at a time, I decided I wanted to raise a family.
Yeah, my unit went to Saudi Arabia. They worked with Schwarzkopf. They were they did all his media work there.
Well, the night
diversion.
Of that invasion in 2003, right? Are you talking 1990?
91.
Right, yeah, 91. Yeah, I was thinking of the second invasion. Well, should I tell the amazing synchronicity on the Brian Weiss?
Yeah, tell me that, and then I want to get into your book, 11 okay. Days in May.
What happened was I pulled a book off the shelf that was out of height formation, and it was 11. It was 11 Days in May. It was Many Lives, Many Masters, and I'm like, what is this book? Who gave it to me? I put it back on the shelf. A woman comes in. She's thanking me. She's sorry I'm leaving. And she's about to leave, and she turns, and she pulls the same book off the shelf, which is back in its space, and says, oh, this is a great book. You need to read it. And so I'm like, well, that was kind of bizarre. You know, the probability of that happening was 1 in 50,000.
That's right.
And so I put it in my briefcase. I go home. I'm in Singapore. I never watch TV. I never get home before 10, but I'm leaving. It's a few days before I'm done. And about to start a company called Essence, and I turn on the TV, and there's a television show on, and the lady is walking around handing out a book saying, we're going to talk about this book, and it's Many Lives, Many Masters. How many millions of books are there? What was the chance of me turning that television show on?
And there was, that's how it works.
You go through the math, and it's one in a billion. And I obviously turned it off and read it. And it's all about, you know, we're a soul and a body, and we've lived many lives and so on. But, you know, these are, you know, I could tell stories for 3 hours, but there are no accidents.
Well, you got into this inspiration because of everything that happened to you. And you put it down in 11 Days in May, which is somewhat of a novel, but tell me about that. What does that mean, 11 Days in May?
Well, you know, the book wrote itself and it named itself, and as strange as it may sound, it would not let me change it. When I tried to change things, the Word document would lock up, the computer would crash, the power would fail, whatever.
that was going to be the title.
I had no intention of writing this book. I sat down one night after sitting out under the stars 11:30 at night, and I was contemplating my navel and life and living in reality, and I just went in. I got an inspiration. I went in, and I started writing, and it was like Peter Max once told me. He said, J.D., if you're watching me painting, you're seeing it unfold as I'm seeing it unfold. And this book unfolded line by line for 11 days. What was written in day, what's in day one was written in day one. What's in day two was written in day two. I had no idea what I was writing. I had no idea where it was going. I mean, some of the things that I started to write, it's 36 parables for the listeners out there that answer, you know, who am I, why am I here, what is love, what is war, what is sex, what is a thought, what are intentions, and so on. So these are 36 parables within the 11 days. And when I was done, I was done in 11 days. And so I called it 11 Days in May, because that's when it was written, 11 Days in May. And my wife said, what did you write? And I said, I don't know, I haven't read it yet.
That's funny. You just kept writing. You were at a homeless man came up to you at a gas station, didn't he?
What happened is one of the parables says, is time relevant? And in that parable, it basically says you can't see time, smell time, taste time, feel time. Time is non-existent. That time is only a unit of measure, and the illusion of time has created part of the illusion of what we think of as reality, is that it's a box that we live in, you know, of distance, speed, location, time, and these things are all illusions. You know, matter is not solid. If you look down into my arm with a microscope and you go a million times down, you're going to see what? Nothing. You know, it's not that I'm not real. It's just that it's not really solid. It's binding energy. And so 11 Days in May goes through these parables. So we get towards the end. I think it's in day 10 or day 11, and time is not relevant. And, you know, after the book is done, and I've sent it to an editor, and she says, you can't say this. And she says, who are you, you know, the authority to say what you're saying here? And I was a little worried about it, and so I started thinking about it, and I tried to edit it and change it, and the computer got locked up, and I was a little worried, and it was 11:30 at night, so I left, and I thought I just need to clear my mind and go out and think, and drove to the gas station, stuck the hose in the truck.
And hold on for 1 second. We'll get back to that gas station when we come back. Plus, I want to get into these visions that you've seen of the future. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And our special guest tonight, J.D. Messenger, talking about his work 11 Days in May. We're going to get into some of his insights as we talk about subconscious and conscious things that have been going on in this universe for a long, long time. George Norrie back with J.D. Messenger. J.D., let's get to your gas station story, and then we'll get into some of your other thoughts.
Yeah. George, you're asking me to explain a story that's in the book about having signs or synchronicities happen, and we've had two on this show already. You know, your producer being the nephew of Paul Galanti, and the other guy echoing my shows and themes about surviving and thriving.
Yes.
And I mean, we're in the zone right now. It's happening.
And you know what? And you just have to go with the flow with it, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And what happened was I wanted to try to change that parable and I couldn't, and I was upset, and my editor was saying, you can't say what you're saying about time. And so I'm at the gas station, I stick the hose in the tank, I put the pump on, I go, it's 11:30 at night. I go walk over to the curb, and I basically say a prayer to God, source, or whatever you think is in charge. You know, can you please help me? I need to fix this time parable. Homeless man walks up to me, and he says, buddy, can you give me $2? Now, I never normally do that because I don't want to sustain, you know, that. I'd rather give money to the homeless shelter. But it was unusual, but I gave him $2. And he turns around, and he starts to walk away. He stops. He turns back and he says, what are you doing sitting here so late at night? And I said, I'm thinking. And he shouts at me, oh, no, 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 you got to stop thinking right now.
No, he knows.
The divine talks through us, through echoes and signs and wonders, and it's unbelievable.
Well, you know, what I got from your book, 11 Days in May, I came away with the thought that things aren't what you think they are.
No, they are not.
Is that a pretty good interpretation?
Yeah, it's absolutely. And, you know, the question I say is, who or what is in control of your life? Now, this is a multidimensional kind of question. You know, there's a personal aspect where we have faulty and outdated programs in our mind. And there is a social aspect, as you've been talking about. You talk about this all the time. Sort of, you know, what is the nature of life living in reality? And, of course, there's theological and so on. But, yeah, that's the big question.
I mean, you've asked yourself, who are we? What are we doing here? Have you gotten answers for yourself?
I've gotten very... You know, my answers are very clear. I'm very comfortable in them. I believe, you know, as a nuclear engineer and a person who's had these experiences that some might call spiritual, metaphysical, whatever, I believe that I am pure energy. And energy is photons, and photons are light, and I am a light being. And I believe that everyone is a light being, a soul and a body who lives many lives.
Excellent. And, let me ask you about some of your visions that you see for the future. And have you always been this insightful?
You know, I actually have, and I blocked it and denied it, which is part of why I went to Dr. Brian Weiss to help me go back and remember that these things actually were happening before I broke my neck and left my body. The earliest things that I have written down go back to when I was 17.
Wow.
What happens is, you know, I am very precise, you know, this sort of engineering mindset. To me, you know, a vision is very different from an insight or an intuition or a premonition. So for the listeners, when I say I have a vision, it's like watching a movie. And it's not a dream. It's like it's just like you're watching a television show and you see something happen. And over two decades of these things happening, you know, you start to trust them. One example, when I was the CEO of Ernst & Young, just to sort of iron this down or nail it down, I had the vision that the financial system was going to crash and we were going to be blind. And sure enough, we were. But when it comes to visions, for example, I've been having visions about the solar flares for like 5 years, visions of civil unrest.
Well, you're probably spot on both of those.
Well, visions about problems in China. I had visions on the energy crisis years before, and I spoke on radio and in 20 different countries on the interviews. People were stoning me when I said 3 years before it was going to happen that oil was going to go to $4 a gallon. And then when it did, they said, well, geez, J.D., what's going to happen next?
Yeah.
I said, well, the stock market's going to crash. They didn't like that one either. What I do is I triangulate. As a military guy, you know what I mean by triangulate?
I sure do.
Yeah.
And I think they knew that during Kennedy's assassination, didn't they?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
If I have a vision, I don't want to share something half-cocked, like saying that solar flares are going to create tremendous power failures and fry our satellites and transformers. I wouldn't say that if I didn't then, as the analyst and engineer, do all of the research, and then as a radio host, interview all of the experts. And then, you know, the final straw is when the National Geographic article came out 6 months ago, you know, confirming all these things. And that's when I came out publicly and told everyone, you need to get, just like Jim was saying, you need to get water supply. You need to, it's an insurance policy. It's exactly what I said. And you said that to Jim.
Yep. We are so tied into the grid system right now, JD. And when that goes, it's going to be a mess.
Well, you know, there's this thing called, you said, or Jim said something about being in denial. Why do people get in denial? Do you know what the normalcy bias is? You probably...
Yeah.
You know, just because we woke up today and everything was fine, and this has happened every day of our lives, we think that tomorrow we're going to wake up and everything's fine. Well, you know, history and time will prove that that is wrong. And in fact, many great theorists and scientists and physicists will tell you that evolution is not a series of small incremental steps. It is a series of small steps followed by radical revolutions and evolutions.
And I think most people don't want to face the fact that bad things can happen.
Well,
it's human nature.
With fear, but as a submarine officer, you know, Admiral Rickover, I got a funny Rickover story if you want to hear it, but Admiral Rickover...
Were you one of Rickover's guys?
Yeah, I interviewed Admiral Rickover, and he didn't like me so much because physics wasn't my best grade, and I was a student, varsity athlete, and all that. And in the middle of the interview, he said, you know, I can't stand guys like you. Well, you know, I grew up in the 60s watching Lost in Space with Will Robinson. And when he said, I can't stand guys like you, I had a flash of the robot going, danger, danger, Will Robinson. And
well, now you want to hear another synchronicity. One of our dear friends on the show a lot, Billy Mumy, who was the little Will Robinson in Lost in Space.
Really?
Yep, there we go again.
Right. I always say this because it was a flash, right? That's a program, okay? When I say you have faulty and outdated programs, that flash of that show was a program in my hard drive, but I actually don't have a hard drive, right? It's one of these illusions. People think knowledge and information is in our brain. It isn't. Our brain is a bunch of fiber optic cables, and there's nothing solid in it. But anyway, so I said to Rickover, excuse me, Admiral, you're wrong. I'll be in your submarine force, and I'll be one of the best damn submarine officers you got. As you might imagine, that did not go over
too
well.
No, not with him.
He stood up. He was 81 years old. I thought I was going to kill him because he looked like he was going to have a heart attack.
I thought he was going to court-martial you.
Well, he slammed his fist on the table and said, get the bleep out of my office. And so I stood up. I turn around, I start to walk out, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, that was great, messenger. You always open your mouth.
Yeah, screwed that one up, right?
I get outside, and the captain who was in behind taking notes slaps me on the back, and he goes, congratulations, son, you're in.
By the time you walked out, did Rickover tell the guy that? Or did
he? He loved me. He said, the Admiral likes you. I said, geez, I'd hate to see what he does to people.
How did he know that the guy liked you, that Rickover liked you?
Because Rickover did behavioral-based interviews. He put me in a submarine 1,000 feet underwater, sitting in a chair in a room, to test me and see how I was going to react and respond.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of backing down, I gave him both barrels, and he knows that he loved that. And that relates to the point I'm trying to say. I'm a survivalist, you know. If the reactor shuts down, if the lights go out, I mean, I'm going to go out. I'm going to do whatever I can to survive and thrive. And so that's it, wired in my DNA. And that's what we need to do to help people. We need to get them to wake up and get out of their dream.
Well, easier said than done, but you're right.
Well, that's where 11 Days of May comes in. That's my hope. You know, as I read it and reflect, you know, my wife has seen me read it many times. She goes, "What are you doing reading your book?" I said, "Well, you know, I need to read it. You know, I wrote it. I need to know what's in it."
Yeah, that would help, right?
It would, and it you know, a lot of people have said it's a very profound book. There's a lot of knowledge and deep wisdom in it, and I don't take credit for being the author. I was a scribe, and I think it is at the right time for humanity, and it's an honor for me to, you know, talk about it. And so I hope it helps people.
Are you convinced, JD, we're going to go through a lot of change?
There's no question in my mind we are going to have to pay the piper, that there's, you know, the whole system has to change. It is completely unsustainable. Now we're kind of merging my Ernst & Young, you know, position papers for presidents and things like that when I talk about an ecosystem. I mean, the ecosystem is unsustainable. It has been unsustainable for more than a decade, probably almost 15 years. It has been artificially sustained with loose money and free money and debt. And, you know, debt has doubled or tripled in 15 years. And, of course, you probably also know that the Consumer Price Index has gone up 35 or 45%, depending on where you live and what you buy.
But wages have not.
But our wages have not. Okay, and therefore, every last disposable dime has been sucked out of the system, and the only way we had economic growth was with the artificial debt, which drove an unsustainable consumption bubble, and that has popped. And so the consumption, the reason I say the collapse or the change must happen, which I think is going to be a good change, is because the consumption model is broken. The debt bubble is being paid down, and people have woken up to they can't buy what they don't need and can't afford.
You say we live in a world of form. What does that mean?
We are attached to, mostly in the United States, okay? There's a lot of countries around the world that don't, you know, think or believe what I'm about to say. But in the United States, we introduce ourselves and we say, "Who are you? What do you do?" You know, we are our job. We are our title. We are attached to a consumption model. We have turned consumption into an Olympic sport.
Right. You are what you do.
And what you wear, and your branded shirt, and your artificial nose, and on and on and on. And this is not who you are. This is a form. Your body is a form. The watch is a form. The car is a form. And when I had my wake-up call, broke my neck, you know, left my body, came back, I realized that I was attached to all of these objects and titles and money form, and that did not make me happy. And so the world of form is the matrix, if you want to call it that, that we're getting all of these advertisements and all these programs and all of, you know, brainwashing, trying to tell you that this is what you need, when in fact we've got a deep emptiness inside, and that emptiness comes from not feeling loved or cared for or wanted. And this is driving part of the... you know, I think we're in the midst of a huge, you know, great cycle. You know, it's a combination of the Mayan cycle and other evolutionary cycles, and humanity is being forced to wake up and make a choice.
If you were still, you know, at Ernst & Young, and you had this ability to tell corporations, you know what, we got to change for people. We got to make we need to start doing things for people. Do you think they'd listen?
There are many people that not only are listening, you would be shocked at some of the large executives and CEOs and members of parliament or government officials who are very awake and quite conscious of what's going on. And in fact, I interviewed over 1,500 privately, and they're very switched on and connected people. However, I do believe there is a small minority of organizations and individuals who control well over $30 trillion in organizations, and they are stuck in the world of form, trying to maintain power and control. This is the last parable in 11 days. that the world has entered this new age of interdependency where water and food and commerce are unaware of the national borders established by men filled with faulty and outdated programs. And that, and the internet brought that on, and I think the internet is God or Source's greatest creation. And I think there's no coincidence that is helping the world wake up. And when the masses wake up, those 300 or so individuals will find themselves wearing no clothes.
Well, you know, the only other person that used to talk in parables outside of you was Jesus. Did you know that?
Well, I'll tell you that there's many people that have looked at this book, because after I wrote it, I didn't know what to do, and I gave it to some friends, and I said, do you think this is any good? And they were like, Dave, this book is unbelievable. And so I got 40 readers to read it, which is a lot of readers. And they all said, including some very big names in the industry, they said, there is no modern equivalent book of parables like this that they could think of.
Huh.
So
maybe I'm right.
Maybe you're right. Yeah.
We're going to take this break pretty soon, JD. We'll take some phone calls with you as well.
Great.
Where do you see humanity going in the next 10 years?
There's a convergence of forces pulling us together and tearing us apart. The world of form and the ego and control and power is trying to tear us apart. And what I call the world of light is trying to pull us together. And there's no question the light will win. It always does. But the people who I call the warriors of the light need to stand up and take action.
Will they?
I think they will. I think that things have to get worse before they get better.
I think so, too. It's not going to be an easy road, is it?
No, it never is. Anything worth having is, you know, look at our country. You know, I like to say guns. Everything has one of three purposes: to create, maintain, or dissolve. Everything is energy, and energy is always creating, maintaining, dissolving, and everything is good. And so someone says, what about guns? I said, guns are good. I said, it's only behaviors of individuals with guns that are not good, but a gun creates a nation. A gun maintains the peace. Now, people who do not good things can destroy people, but this is the nature of evolution, and I think it's really part of the divine process. We talk about that longer.
Do you miss working for major corporations anymore?
Not at all.
No. It's out of your system, isn't it?
It is out of my system, and I hope that I can do more, you know, from this point of view.
Your website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. The name of the book, 11 Days in May, J.D. Messenger. And let me spell his website for you, because it's not what it sounds like. JDMessinger.com. Linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. When we come back in a moment, we'll take your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. If you need to email me, well, let's make that easy for you too. George@coasttocoastam.com. Also, we've got a new link for you at georgenori.com. Takes you right to coasttocoastam.com. Make them all your favorites. We'll be right back.